Hello again, and welcome to a new episode of the Stuart Crazy Podcast. As always, I am Rob Nelson. Today's episode is going to focus on the subject of Shimmer's Lake, a tourist attraction in the early 20th century in Hall County, Nebraska. We are going to be speaking today with Kay Sinova, the Director of Interpretation here at Stuart Museum, and then later in the episode, we are going to shift gears and talk to relatives of the original Shimmer family. Les and Karen Shimmer are stopping by the podcast. I'm really looking forward to that conversation. So without any further ado, why don't we sit back by the lake and dive right in. And we are back with more of the Stuart Crazy Podcast. I am joined today by Kay Sinova, Director of Interpretation at Stuart Museum. Thank you for being on the show.
Glad to be back again.
Today we are jumping into the rich, rich topic of Shimmer's Lake and the Sandcrog Tavern. Before we were hitting play on this, we are both talking about how they both locations start to become merged and intertwined together. So we thought we'd talk about both of them when the opportunity came to it.
Well, actually, it starts with Sandcrog. Sandcrog is what it's called, you know, very simply, you know, it appears in the Times.
Yeah.
On the 3rd of November, 1875, Martin Shimmer is now running the Sandcrog. Enough said.
That's it.
That's all that's in there in the Times. And anybody who knew Martin Shimmer knew what Sandcrog was going to be about.
Who was Martin Shimmer?
Well, he was one of the early settlers here in Hall County. And he had some successes and failures in farming, as did most everybody, especially in the 1870s. There's a lot of grasshopper plagues and all that other stuff. And according to the book Sandcrog, he kind of went, well, let's maybe think of something else to do. And that's when he decided to put up this idea of the Sandcrog.
Yeah. I mean, he was originally from Germany.
Schleswig-Holstein area, yes.
Exactly. And then immigrated, I believe, in the early 1860s.
I believe that's correct.
And what I read is this part of the country wasn't his ideal location when he was beginning to start out.
I don't think this area was anybody's ideal location. I think a lot of people just got here and went, okay, good enough.
Well, I mean, like, he, in his own words, was looking to go to Oregon. But by the time he got to Davenport, he was running low on money. And then he got to Grand Island and was like, okay, well, this is going to be okay for now. I need to find some work to make some money. And then before you knew it, he was, you know, kind of here.
I think that happened a lot. A lot of people kind of got to this point and I'll work, I'll make some money, and then I'll go on. Sometimes people did, sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they went and then ended up coming back, in some cases repeatedly.
Yeah, I mean, his early years in this community are pretty well documented, and you can kind of see that rise from obscurity into becoming a pretty prominent businessman in the Grand Island, Hall County community.
Well, anybody who grew up in Grand Island, Hall County knows the name Shimmer.
Sure.
Because Shimmer's Tavern was a bar, popular bar in the 70s when I was coming of age. So, yeah, it's been around for a really long time.
I just have an article here from the Republican talking about an employer wanting choppers to come chop down trees, essentially, and
that's
clear
what
paths.
That's what he started as.
And he used that employment to eventually homestead a property near Alda, and from there he just began to climb.
Yeah, that was the railroad, I believe it was. He was working with the Union Pacific.
Yeah, there was actually, like, if we want to just jump in right to the Sandcrog story here. What do you know the origin of that name means, just to kind of start?
Well, I do know that, sand, I think, is kind of self-explanatory, but
sure.
Crog means something along the lines of pitcher of beer or jug of beer, something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And they said that the Wood River was so sandy that it actually flowed right side up. So Sandcrog,
yeah,
perfect name.
Yeah, it was because he was right on the banks of what was, it became Wood River. It was considered part of the North Channel, but there was a lot of different damming of the river going on during this 1870s period. So things kind of changed and shifted a bit.
Yeah, they're like, he bought this new property where the sand crog was constructed after he was homesteading. And it was perfect for a lot of reasons, one of which you just said. And then there was the construction of a new railroad between Grand Island and St. Joseph, Missouri.
Which has its own sordid history.
Exactly. But you just kind of see this man's wheels begin to turn once he builds this tavern. And then he kind of sees, oh, what else could this tavern use?
I think it was kind of like the stars are aligning. Heck, you know, I've got people, they can be dropped off here from more than one point. It is, you know, it's outside of the city of Grand Island. And, hey, maybe we could do some fun things out here.
Yeah, I mean, by 1885, there's a ballroom built. By 1898, he has the lake built. Early 1900s, there's cabins for people to come enjoy the resort.
And people didn't just come to just periodically stay. Some of them would summer out there. So it kind of became, in fact, it was called a summer resort for many, many years, because people had these cabins out there, and it would be a way to escape the heat of the city of Grand Island by coming to stay at their cabin at Sand Crog.
Yeah, and there were quite a few of them. We're not just talking about one or two. I think that I read by the early 1920s, there was something like 23 cabins that he had out there that people were renting.
I don't know
for
the what
season.
The final total was. If you look at some of the postcard images, you can see a number of structures in there, as well as some interesting activities going on. So,
and year-round activities, too.
I mean, it was like you could do anything there, because in the summer you could go fishing, you could go swimming, you could go boating, you could, you know, just paddle around there. You could go have picnics. You could have meetings out there. There were auctions. There were groups that would come for different type of political rallies and wedding receptions and dances and Christmas parties. And they were very well known for their big 4th of July celebrations.
Yeah, and I was particularly interested to hear that fairly early on, like maybe even right off the bat after the lake is constructed in the 1895-1898 range, depending on where you start
he starts in the earlier period of time, but I think it takes a while for, I think he kind of fine-tunes it, finesses it over a number of years.
But he, you know, he contacts, was it a Union Pacific or was it a St. Joe's Missouri train?
The official line was the St. Joe Grand Island. That it actually had a number of names, but the last connecting point was the area that went between Hastings and Grand Island. And it was technically part of Union Pacific. And there's just a real short branch of that line that still exists today. In fact, it runs just right to the east of the museum. And it goes out, and then it curves off to the power plant. But that's the last remaining portion of the St. Joe Grand Island line.
I see, you know, people coming in from Hastings on the train to Shimmers Lake in the summertime on the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
With the band coming along to start the
and
party.
Probably and playing on the train on the way in.
It just sounds like a time that has sort of passed us by in this really
romantic
way.
There's just no parties like that anymore.
There's not. I mean, there's not even... There's occasional parades, but not. There was a parade for everything then, and a party for everything then, and dance for everything then.
I think they took the opportunity to celebrate anything and everything as much as they could.
Yeah.
I ran across this, the advertisement in the Democrat on the Friday the 29th of June, 1900. The biggest 4th of July celebration ever held in central Nebraska. Sand Crog, races, sports, and amusements of all kind, lots of cool water and shade, steamboat riding on the lake. The St. Joe and Grand Island Railroad will run special excursions to this famous resort as follows on the 4th. Going, leaving Grand Island at 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, and 11 p.m. Returning, leaving San Croix at 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and 12 p.m. That's a lot it of is. Trips back and forth to Grand Island.
But they clearly needed them.
Obviously. It was a busy, busy time.
Yeah, and I mean, this wasn't just a summer getaway. I mean, the year-round, Shimmers Lake had something going on always. I was really interested to hear about the ice business that was taking place there. And to me, it seemed like the reason that he originally built the lake was of its location and ability to create commercial ice production.
And that's a lot. There's a lot of ponds around Grand Island that had their start as ice ponds. Some of them are sadly lost forever, but there are still some that are in existence. And it was a big business back then because it's before the modern refrigeration.
Yeah, and we're talking about Shimmer, who employed between 50 and 100 people for seasonal work. These are during the, what were called the freezing months, roughly December through early March.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a unpredictable job to have, because if you have a mild winter, you're really not going to create too much
ice. You're not going to have a lot of ice. And the goal was to fill whatever structure you had with ice as much as possible. And if you had too much, the railroad would willingly take it off your hands, because yeah, they would need ice and ship ice to other parts.
Yeah. So, I mean, but from there, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it starts out as this kind of lucrative endeavor to become a part of the ice business. And then
it turned into so much more.
Yeah. So there's ice skating in the winter, mm-hmm, and then there's a swimming hole that comes in the summertime.
And fishing
and steamer boats that are going out onto the lake.
That would have been awesome, just to go for a ride on the steamer around that. Just knowing, you know, the area of the property and what it must have looked like.
If it didn't sink, anyway.
Yeah, well, that is true.
I did come across one report that, you know, people were having a really jolly old time because one of the steamers began to sink and people had to swim to shore, and it wasn't that deep, so everybody was just having a laugh at it, yeah, I guess. But no, it just, what it must have been to see that place in its heyday. Kind of want to just like talk about, that's the introduction to it, by the way. Kind of want to talk about some specific issues regarding this location. We said that, you know, the San Croix and Shimmer, of German origin, started this place. Did he intend it to be a place of, you know, German camaraderie, or did it just kind of happen that way?
I think both, really, honestly. I think that it was a place where other people who were from Germany could get together and be with other people from Germany. But it kind of morphed into more than that, because it expanded well beyond the German, eventually it expanded beyond the German culture. But they were able to go there and get together and communicate, and just, I think one of the things, I would just be German.
Yeah.
To just be German there for, at least for a little bit, because there was always, as with most immigrants, there's always hostility, people who don't understand your language and all that. And to be able to just kind of let your German hair down a little,
yeah,
bit, it was probably refreshing to be able to do that.
Well, you know, I mean, Grand Island has this history of having essentially a division in our German community,
yes,
as well. So like from what I heard, this place, the San Croix, originally kind of starts out as that place for the newly arrived German immigrant, mm-hmm, to, as you said, let their hair down, speak in German, be amongst Germans, drink German beer. And then it gradually becomes a place for all Germans, but there, at the beginning at least, there's that division between the newly arrived rural German and then maybe the merchant class,
yes,
or the business class.
People who've been here for longer and all of that.
Who are already sort of Americanized a little,
yes,
bit.
Yes, established. We have remnants of a division in Grand Island still today, the Plaudits and the Liederkranz.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that I came across several articles. When I went on to the digitized newspapers, I just put in SANCROG, that search term, and hundreds and hundreds of pages with, of course, it's hundreds and hundreds of hits of the word, those two words together, SANCROG. But there's countless pages of different things, topics about SANCROG. And they would have, the Liederkranz would hold picnics out there. And I didn't come across anything about the Plottish, but I didn't take that much time yet to sure. fully explore it. I think that there's probably a lot of hidden gems in the newspapers that we haven't found yet that we're going to be able to maybe learn some more about the different classes or cultures of the Germans who did activities out there.
Well, what kind of blows me away, and just kind of speaking to that foregone era, is just like the way that beer had the power to bring people together in a way that maybe nothing else seemed to. You know, like you're talking about a really important cultural facility where dances are held and, you know, political speeches are told and, you know, people are meeting their significant other, and all of these sorts of things are happening because of the importance that beer plays in or played in German culture in this time.
And it's not my understanding. I have not been fortunate enough to ever have a real German beer. My understanding is that it's nothing like what American beers are.
That's a story in and of itself.
Yeah. That's for another time. But it was more of a common drink, and people, you know, they drank it with meals. They drank it for whatever. Carolyn Converse writes about getting the bucket from her father and going to one of the bars to get beer for him and bring it back. You know, it was a common, you know, beer was the drink.
And healthy.
Yes.
According to the Robert Perry book, who wrote a significant amount on this topic, he said that Germans like to think of beer as nutritious or as liquid food, and that it could be taken as a sleep aid or even like a way to combat indigestion. And
as many drinks were developed, the sodas and the beers and all of these health elixirs, a lot of things, even chocolate was considered a healthy drink at one point in time.
Well, it's good for your soul, if
well,
nothing else.
Yes, it is. As far as I'm concerned, it's very good for your soul.
Well, this relationship with alcohol at Schimmer's Lake and the SANCROG begins to develop and change over time. And these, you know, immigration issues and ethnic divides really play a substantial role in the history of this institution when you're talking about temperance, when you're talking about prohibition and
blue laws.
Exactly. Do we want to dig into that just a little bit?
For people who don't know what blue laws are, they're kind of Sunday laws. There was prohibitions against a number of things occurring on a Sunday. No playing of baseball games. No, in fact, the preachers of the area would positively riot over such things. Dances in particular, there were there was an article where they were issuing an order that they were going to arrest anybody who was caught dancing on a Sunday. And of course, drinking was also considered not to be, you're supposed to be in your house of worship, worshiping on Sunday, not drinking, dancing, or partying, picnicking.
No fun at all.
No fun at all. No fun at all.
And, you know, so Prohibition comes to America 1920, is that 1920 1923.
It's a little bit earlier.
It's a little earlier. I think it's 1917. Mm-hmm. But even before then, Nebraska had what was called the Slocum Act, which was passed by our state legislature in 1881. And that was really an attempt to sort of regulate it as much as they could, the sale and traffic of alcohol.
Yeah, it didn't really work well.
No, and it never did, even when they passed it nationally. But some of those laws, like, you can't drink anything on a Sunday, or they would raise the price for you to acquire a liquor license as an institution. Mm-hmm. Schimmer's Lake lost their, or didn't lose their license, but they had it the price of it go from $500 a year to $1,000 a year.
Which at that time would be a significant amount of money.
A huge amount of money. I mean, $500 at that time, already a lot of money. So to double it, how much was a house in, 1898?
You could buy a small cottage for like $600.
Exactly. It just was an issue that continuously played an important role. And, you know, Shimmer's Lake was seen as kind of this, it was out of town, or at least it was on the outskirts of Grand Island. It was kind of seen like it was above the law at times. I know
or outside of the scope of the law.
Exactly.
At least the parameters of Grand Island City, because it was not in Grand Island City, it was in Hall County.
There are stories out there of little nefarious activities happening with alcohol during Prohibition and before, and people smuggling and bootlegging alcohol into this area. And
I think if we did a lot of research, we could probably do a 20-part series about the Prohibition era in Hall County and some of the interesting activities that occurred.
Yeah. My favorite that I've heard is a tie between hiding bottles of alcohol in horse collars.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite ones. Another one around here was a farmer who kind of hollowed out his watermelons and filled with alcohol. He was just taking them to market. Hey, guys, I got the best watermelons here. And he just sold them in plain sight, you know.
And everybody knew that he had the best watermelons.
Yeah, so.
Well, even the brewery, you know, they were making soda pop during the Prohibition period. But I understand they had false bottoms in the in the barrels there, and were able to get away at least for a while until they were discovered.
And also, like, while you couldn't buy beer, you could buy malt, like the central ingredient, and then they would give you a recipe on the pack that said, "Don't do this."
Yes, because it will create alcohol.
Yeah, if you mix this with this at this temperature for this long, it'll create this. Definitely don't do that.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's the cheeky kind of thing that people would do today.
So, I mean, we've been talking a great deal about, you know, all the things that took place here over time. Who was Martin Shimmer? Was he responsible for this? Was it his family's ingenuity and just teamwork and collaboration, you think?
I mean, Martin certainly got the ball rolling, but I think the family kind of kept things going. Like I said, Shimmer's was a place when I was a teenager. I don't have a recollection, but the part of Shimmer's or Sandcrog was the dance hall was deconstructed when they did the widening of 281.
Correct.
And so that was lost, and there was a lot of there was one structure that after the widening was off to the side. They're currently, in its location, they're building this insurance company over here right now. But that was, I think, the last vestige of that. But I think that they served probably like some bar food and beer and, you know, just simple stuff. But it was a place in the 70s where people went to the bar.
Well, I happen to have a menu from Shimmer's Lake. Right here in front of me, from Shimmer's Lake Cafe. And they had everything from porterhouse and T-bone steak, spelled T-E-E, for 50 and 60 cents, to Denver sandwiches, clubhouse sandwiches, sardines for 10 cents. And for miscellaneous side items, you can get your smoked eel for a quarter, dried herring for 25 cents, hot tamales for 15 cents, and an imported sardines for a quarter as well.
So what was the difference between the imported and the never mind. Well, the eels, you know, Pier, which was the Keeler's original property, he would do the pickled carp. He had carp in his pond. Oh. They're the ice ponds there. And he would advertise, you know, during the summer that he would sell, you know, you could fish for the carp, or he'd have pickled carp or that type of thing. So were eels grown in the Shimmer's Lake? I don't know. That means that further research must be done.
Maybe. I know that Shimmer departed this earth in 1922, although it carried on in the family for another 25-ish, 30 years.
It mentioning as SANCOG, at least through the 1920s, as I said, not all of them are digitized, but it... I had, and Shivers Tavern is going in the 70s, so some aspect of it is going on. Now, what happened is there was a failure of the dam that kind of ended the water phase of the property.
In 1942, I believe.
During the, you know, the World War II period of time, a lot of things went kind of belly up because there wasn't enough people to take care of things. So that ended that particular portion. I still believe that it was a popular picnic location.
Yeah.
And people would go continue to go out there for years.
I think until the early 1950s, there were still people renting the summer cabins, at least.
Yeah, I think it would have been interesting to see some of those cabins, see what they look like, and to kind of experience them.
Well, so, I mean, as we all know, unfortunately, this place that I would have really have liked to have seen kind of eventually ran its course, and the train stopped rolling here, and there was no longer a swimming hole, and people started going other places for summer.
Yeah, other parks became popular or started to be created in Grand Island proper, and people started going to those locations. There was, as the Keeler property became the pier, that rose in popularity, and there was kind of a competition between the pier and Shimmers, and that kind of, and eventually the pier won, whereas the Shimmers kind of fell by the wayside, I think because it was, you know, people didn't necessarily want to go that far.
Yeah.
There was probably many, many, many reasons.
I know at his height, it's reported again in the Shimmers SANCOG by Perry. It's a great read for anybody who is interested.
It's a book that is well worth getting because there's so much interesting history in it.
But Shimmer at his height owned 3,000 acres of land.
Pretty good.
From homesteading in Alda to 3,000 acres in nearby Grand Island, that's quite a feat. But by the 60s, I know that things had begun to change. And I think Sturm Museum's building, the building process actually starts to kind of butt up against...
Cut into things, yeah.
The property.
A little bit.
Do you know how that all shook out?
Now, I have... Because the part that is, it's now the Shimmers property, or at least the SANCOG property, part of it is now what's George Clayton Hall County Park.
Yeah.
But it was originally, parts of it were originally part of the museum property when the museum was first being built. For those who don't know, Sturm Museum was originally going to be built over by what is now the Swift plant just to the north of it. When the powers that be found out about the meatpacking plant coming in, they decided to shift locations, and that's why we're located where we're at now. The Belzer purchased the land in 1963, and then he ceded it in later in 63 to the Grand Island Industrial Corporation. In August of 1966, the corporation deeded the land to the Hall County Museum Board.
I see.
And from there, it kind of takes off to there. Now, the original, there's several different stories about this, but originally, the reason the Stir Building faces south is originally we were supposed to have the entrance come from the south, on the Shimmers side, with a bridge going across the Wood River. And in fact, they got some grants to help make that happen, but it was matching. And my understanding is that the museum board couldn't get enough funds for that. But rather than lose that, they talked to the county about the county taking over that and developing that side as a park so that they could get the matching funds so that they could do, you know, the development of the park. And George Clayton was instrumental in the development of that park, and that's why it's named, he's honored with the name the George Clayton Hall County Park.
So it all just shook out that way.
That's how it would have been interesting to have a bridge going across the wood and coming across.
It would have
across.
Been gorgeous.
It would have been really nice. But it's, you know, sometimes there's just not enough money in the world to make everything happen. So.
Well, I mean, I think we still do a good job as a museum and as a cultural institution of upholding that tradition of Shimmer's Lake by podcasts like this. And there's a great many photographs in our collection that tell the story of how great a place
this
was.
There's little bits of shimmer everywhere. There's
exactly.
Shimmer barns, and because we've got a shimmer barn
exactly.
over here. And we've got all, like as you say, the photographs and you know, a few other things.
Tell me about the water wheel that we have.
Well, it's actually like a kind of like a mill wheel. And when they were doing the flood diversion project, they uncovered it when they were working on the river area. And it was on our side.
Yeah.
And so Tom Oshlow was kind of instrumental in helping us make sure that we got it on our side. And so if anybody wants to see it, stop into the Glade Mill. It's in the engine room.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, this is quite a while. It was in 2002 that this excavation kind of took place. And Tom Oshlow, who is our director of maintenance, is still on staff.
Yep.
Still kicking up a fuss at any chance he gets. But I think we're all grateful to him for taking the lead on that.
Yeah, that's a really important part of Hall County history, and just to have just a little snippet of that, because that has that, you know, immediate connection with San Croix. There's so many parts of it, and it's really fortunate, I think, that we are located right next to what was San Croix, and you know, there's parts of it that probably were part of the property at one point in time. And the proximity of the museum grounds to the St. Joe Grand Island Railroad, San Croix,
sure.
all of that stuff. There's so many interesting connections that we're just barely scratching the surface.
And speaking of connections, in the next segment of the podcast, I'm going to be speaking with a member of the Shimmer family, and they are not far away. They actually live nearby here on Shimmer Lake Drive.
Oh, that's fortunate.
Exactly. So... We're playing it pretty close to the chest, and as you can see, we're still keeping it in the Stir Museum family with neighbors that close to us.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing some of their stories.
Absolutely. So with that, I just want to say thank you to Casanova, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after these words.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Elfman's Barbershop. F.R. Elfman's Barbershop and Bathroom, Frank R. Elfman, proprietor. We are prepared to give you the best of service and offer both hot and cold water baths, elegant furnishings, and everything neat and clean and up to date. Come and see for yourselves, as we are yours to please. Special attention is given to ladies' haircuts, cutting in your own home.
I am joined today by Les and Karen Shimmer. Thank you both for being on the podcast.
So I don't know, what do you want to talk about?
Talk about the time I got my grandpa in trouble.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think we should put that on the radio.
I think it'd be a cute one you should do.
Well, that was before 281 was built. And the old, I was 8 or 9 probably, somewhere in there. And of course, I have had two uncles that lived over on that side, over there, east further. And they were shelling corn that day.
Yeah.
And they started one place, and they got done there. So they was all moving the sheller and the trucks and all the equipment. And Grandpa, he jumps in his car. And so I jumped in the car with him and rode with him. Never seen it, didn't say I couldn't. And we was headed over to the next place to shell corn. Well, we made it come by, and we stopped at Shimmer's Lake, the tavern, which was on the highway.
It was right in the middle of where the highway is.
The old
the San Croix?
The
yeah.
old building, yeah.
yeah.
And we went in, and he had a beer, and he bought me a bottle of pop. So we're sitting there eating dinner, and the guys are all talking. Yeah, I says, Grandpa bought me a bottle of pop today. Oh, you should have heard my dad and his two brothers. well, how much did they charge for beer this morning, you know? Grandpa never said one word. He sat there and ate. He never said a word.
That's
and
great.
They rode him all out.
Never took you,
you know what? I never got to ride with him again.
You paid the price then.
Yeah. But I think that was, I believe that was probably Lena Galleon that was in there working that morning. And there was a couple other people. I wish they'd have saved that building.
I know. It's one of the first buildings from this area that had a lot of historical significance.
And it had that. I remember seeing that. I can remember that. I'm probably about the only time I was ever in there. And it had that round dance floor, you know.
Yeah, that was a really great thing. It was like octagonal.
Yeah.
And like people got married, or didn't get married,
well,
but like.
My parents had their wedding dance there, and so did his parents.
My parents
really?
Did too.
Oh, yeah.
My
yeah.
folks got married in 1942.
I know that it was a really important landmark for most of the community, and yeah. people met there, significant others there. They went there for dances. There were dances for everything back then.
There was a deal. When I was growing up, Mom had this note. It was a note from some lady that wanted to meet my dad one night before they were married. And she says, I'll be looking for you, and I'll be wearing a rose. And we'd tease him about that, and he never did find her.
Really?
Yeah.
So they met later on then? Or they just never met?
No, this was a different lady.
Oh, gotcha.
Than what my mom, but Mom had the note that they...
I see.
They were, I think they were engaged at that time.
Oh, so it worked out for her then.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, they had a lot of fun. They did a lot of things there. They did lots of celebrations.
And, I mean, there was just something for everybody, it seemed like to me. There was cabins, and there was boat rides, and there was a swimming hole, and then
yeah.
it was year-round, and people ice skated and had, mm-hmm. well, I mean, seasonal work, at
yeah.
least with the ice harvesting.
Cutting the ice, yes. The ice.
Well, then they took it over there and loaded on rail cars. And
yeah.
Shipped it, I don't know where.
But yeah,
but everywhere.
A lot of ice was stored in the plottage, too.
That was oh,
the
really?
Ice house. Yes.
That makes sense that those two...
Where the ball fields are now,
mm-hmm.
that was a lake.
Yeah.
And they'd cut ice in the winter and put it in there.
It kind of makes sense that those two would have the connection, because that wasn't the Sandkrog and Plage.
You have High German and Low German.
Exactly.
The Low German were the farmers, the country people, the more settled settlers. And they did Sandkrog. They were there a lot. The High German were the ones that started the Liederkranz.
Sure.
And they had picnics in town, and they were different. They spoke a different dialect, and they had different outlooks on life. The High German were the ones that were more the business people,
yeah,
merchants, and that
had been established here maybe for a generation or two, and
yeah,
just it was a kind of different group. Well,
my grandpa came from Germany, and my mom's not dead, and as we grew up. He spoke Low German, and I took German in school, and that was the German we learned. And so I could speak to him in German.
That's great.
Yeah, and my mom didn't speak English until she was in kindergarten.
Wow.
So she knew a lot of German too. My dad's stepmother, we had a party line, and they'd all be on that line. It was my grandma, my aunt. I had about three aunts on there. And Mom and Dad, you know, the whole on this party line. And my grandma, Fran, she'd speak German so that nobody would know what she was talking about.
That's one way to get around it.
Yeah.
Or but, say exactly what you mean anyway.
But Mom knew what she was saying. So.
So we were saying at the beginning, you're not really necessarily sure what the connection is to
we're not
Martin
sure.
Schimmer, but it was probably nephew, cousin, something along
my
those lines.
My great-grandfather could have been, yeah.
We feel it is connected somehow. We may be cousins. There were Schimmers that were in with the first group of land of settlers, too, and they're all mixed up in there. My daughter did a 4-H history thing, and she did a speech on Store Museum, too. And we looked in your archives, but there's so many Johns.
Yeah.
And so many Henrys. And then
Williams.
You have to know the middle names. Well, we finally figured out that his grandfather is John P. John Peter?
On the grave, it just says John P.
Yeah.
It doesn't say whether that was Peter.
So we need
or...
to keep looking for there.
Well, I can definitely arrange a time with you guys to
okay.
Okay.
sit down
maybe,
and try to figure that out in our
maybe
archives.
Maybe later after harvest, we'll Yeah. Don't do that. Uh-huh. And then, like I told you, his dad, Harry's son, one of them, Martin, was his godfather, but we don't know how we're related to him. Also, my dad, my mom, I come from Worms area, and my dad lived there all his life. They used to, when they were young, they would ride the train from St. Labore on a special day, Labor Day or whatever, and they'd get on early in the morning and be here all afternoon at Shimmer's Lake, and then they'd ride the train back.
Yeah, there was the St. Joe line that went between here and Hastings, yeah. And I think maybe there was even a few other places.
It was a really, really big deal. I guess they, you know, all the people come ride trains and come in and play and do all their thing, and then they left.
There was a ton to do year-round. Do you guys live on the property right now that was formerly Shimmer's? You're just kind of nearby to it?
We live on Shimmer's Drive, but we live to the west.
Okay.
And where we live now, it's where his folks live. But we farm a piece of land that was Thompson's, Daryl Thompson's, and that is where the first town company that came to Nebraska camped there on that creek that goes through there.
Okay.
And then further down
Daryl's
to the...
Daryl's grandmother is one of the first ones.
One of the first ones. The creek that goes further west of us, another mile, on Wood River, we have part of land on Wood River, that has some old tracks in it from the train. The Mormon
trail
went down to the bottom of where his grandparents lived. And then
that's amazing. You mentioned a silver spoon. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What does that entail?
It's real silver. And it's...
I call it a tablespoon.
Yeah, it's not a baby spoon. But it has engraved on there, Godfather, Maynard Shimmer, and Martin Shimmer. Both names are on there. And then the date when he was baptized. It's a baptismal foot.
And who was Maynard?
My dad.
Okay, so that's... Then Martin Shimmer would have been the godfather of Maynard.
Yeah.
So there's that... There must have been a close connection there.
Yeah.
Need to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Did either of you have the opportunity to be at Shimmer's Lake when it was still, it still functioned through the 50s.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if you guys had a chance or knew anybody who made it to it when it was in its heyday or remember talking about it.
I do remember sleeping in the car that Mom and Dad went to the dance and we were sleeping in the car.
Yeah.
Did that a lot.
Yeah.
They just put us to bed in the car.
Just trails and trees, and they just parked in by certain trees there, and we didn't go that often. I don't have no idea what it was. That was a wedding dance or what? I was pretty young then.
But I mean, they had dances for everything. They celebrations for everything, just given the time of the year. So it would make sense that was happening almost every weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I wish the thing that bugs me now. My grandpa Shimmer died right after we got married, didn't he? And I wish I was 25. Wish I'd sat down and visit with him. But Dad and him, I never heard anything about that. You know, he never, just that, you know, he helped do the ice and that worked there, but.
Is that something you need to do while you're young is that talk to the elders and find out? We'd talk with my grandpa a lot about Germany and how he came over and it's very interesting, very, very interesting.
He talked about it. And I wish we'd go on over there on a Sunday to visit him. And he'd talk about the czars and all that.
Oh, sure.
Why I didn't have a tape recorder.
Yeah.
Sat there, for an hour and just tell how...
He was an interesting person.
Yeah.
During the war, his neighbor was paid to spy on him.
In World War I?
Yes.
Wow.
Because
he was here in Palmer.
Yeah. Yeah. He came over as an indentured servant, and he started in
Oxford
at a dairy farm. And his sister brought him over, and his sister was working there. So they worked their indenture off. And then the man that owned the farm, he had some... There's two different versions. One was horses and one was donkeys, but I think it was horses because Grandpa loved horses. And he had to take, him and another person had to take these horses they herded him from Oxford to Palmer.
Sure.
To sell him. And he tells about he waited at a, he had to, they had to cross a railroad track, and this buggy was over here waiting for him to pass. And he said, there was just the most beautiful woman sitting there. And he says, I just married her. So that's why he stayed there. So that's why he said
that's a good reason.
Yeah. And you think he was like so young when he came over. And he was told that America had really, really good weather. You didn't need coats, and they had golden streets and all this stuff. Well, he says, I gave my coat away before I left, but he says, I think I needed it.
Yeah.
So I about froze to death when I got off there in New York.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I bet.
He talked about all that
What island? What's that called?
Probably not
Ellis. Ellis Island. Yeah. He says, I about froze to death. He said it was.
But he had a rough.
Couldn't speak English, nothing, all by himself, 17 years old. Walking in New York, got on the train and rode out here.
There's a million stories like that, and all of them are unique and original and worth knowing and hearing about. The people who came out here and did what they did are a class all their own.
They had to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
They were.
Pretty tough to leave your whole family like that.
And venture out, and who knows what was going to happen.
Well, his father had told him in Germany, Grandpa was the second son. The oldest son got the land. And he said, there is nothing here for you. You just all go to America. So that's why he did. And he would never, ever go back. Grandma wanted to go back and see people. And he, no, I'm not going. But every time he had a picture taken, he had to have a horse or two with him. Because if you had horses, you were rich.
Well, even, you know, Martin Shimmer, when he came over here, he wasn't planning on being in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. This was a stop along the way, according to our records. He wanted to go to Oregon. And he just about ran out of money by the time he got to Iowa.
Yeah.
He had enough to get out here, and then he figured, you know, I got to get a job and try to save a little bit of money, and maybe I can get out there. And before you know it, you know, he's
that's how we got.
He lived in here. That Thompson section there for a little while.
Yeah.
Near Alda.
Yeah.
I think he homesteaded near Alda for a while.
That's by where we live. Yeah.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
I don't remember anything else.
No, hey, that'll do it. Karen and Les, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
This is going to conclude another episode of the Stuart Crazy Podcast. I really hope you enjoyed yourselves this week. Next week, we are going to be back with more fun historical content. We are going to be talking about the subject of colleges and back to school in Grand Island. We are going to be diving into some colleges that no longer exist in the Hall County area. And then later in that episode, we're going to be talking with somebody from Central Community College here in Grand Island about working and living in the modern education system of today in higher education. So join us again next week for another episode of the Stuart Crazy Podcast. See you then.